Welcome to the Business Radio Network. Enjoy Small Biz, Big Voices with Stephanie Rising.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Rising, a business coach and author in beautiful Tucson, Arizona. Being a small business owner is rewarding, but can feel lonely. Few people understand what it's like to sweat payroll, market themselves as a brand, or create revenue streams from scratch. For the next hour, join your tribe on Small Biz, Big Voices, the podcast that celebrates the stories and impact of your fellow small business owners. Today, we're going to visit with Elizabeth Slater of Youth on Their Own. Our interview will conclude with a Proust lightning round, and our final segment will be Dear Coach, when I'll coach listeners through issues they've emailed in. But first, it's my pleasure to introduce Elizabeth Slater of Youth on Their Own. Elizabeth is a youth advocate who is currently serving as the Chief Executive Officer for Youth on Their Own. YODO is a nonprofit organization that supports the high school graduation and continued success of teens experiencing homelessness. Over the past two decades, Elizabeth has worked with teens in professional and volunteer capacities, including education coach, health advocate, and safe housing proponent. Elizabeth completed a decade of service with AmeriCorps, developing and evaluating dropout prevention programs in urban public schools. She is also a professional fundraiser and has secured over $900 million in funding for education programs and health services for low-income youth and families. Elizabeth, welcome to the show, and thank you not only for spending time with us today, but for everything that you've done for our community.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
I wanted to start by asking you to describe for us why Youth on Their Own, or YODO, was started and what it does to help homeless teens graduate from high school.
Well, Youth on Their Own was started by a high school counselor named Ann Young, who realized that many of her students were dealing with housing insecurity, and it was affecting them in really unique ways, including causing them to drop out of school. So she sort of identified this issue as a school counselor and then got together with a bunch of other volunteers and youth champions, and she created YODO. So YODO was born in 1986, and we've been around since then with the same mission of serving homeless teens and helping them to graduate high school. The way we do that has evolved over the years, but it always has focused on reducing the barriers that those students face that are really unique to them. So you can imagine, we serve middle school and high school students. So you can imagine being 13 years old, 14 years old, all of a sudden not having a family to take care of you and still being committed to school and wanting to finish and wanting to complete your high school graduation.
Yeah.
It's really tough. So the three things we do to try to reduce those barriers. The first is that we offer some financial support. So students can actually earn a stipend from us. If they go to school consistently and they earn A's, B's, and C's in their classes, we will pay them a check, $160 a month they can earn. And we found that that's a really powerful incentive because a lot of students end up dropping out of school to earn money. When they're on their own, they really must. So a lot of them work anyway. And so they might need to drop out to earn more hours at work so that they're earning an income. So we try to supplement that by giving them a chance to earn the stipend.
Especially if you're a middle schooler, are you going to get an income from? So $160 to someone who is 12, that's very significant.
We have to sort of tailor the program a little bit for middle school because it's hard for them to cash a check, for example. It's just not feasible. So we often provide them the resources through a gift card. So we always try to think about what's the best way to reach a student where they're at. And then the second thing we provide are basically all basic needs for free. So we try to make sure students in our program can get food, clothing, school supplies, deodorant, bus pass, anything they would need to spend money on in order to survive, they can get it from us for free. We have a mini mall where they can come and shop once a week, or we can bring it to them at their school. So that's really crucial. And the third thing is we provide guidance. So we have this wonderful little army of near peer age program coordinators, and they actually are the ones who go out to the schools and create those one-on-one relationships with students, foster trust with them, learn what they're going through, and act as a consistent source of support and sort of a cheerleader for them to finish school. And it helps us intervene. You know, we found that just one kind of emergency situation can totally derail a student's goals to stay in school. Mm. So if they have an adult at Yodo that they can trust and say, you know, I have been working so hard and now I'm paying to rent my own apartment and this one emergency came up and if I miss rent, I'll get kicked out and be homeless again. Sometimes we can step in just that one time and provide some emergency assistance to keep them on track. So that's been just a really wonderful resource for students too.
That's great. And the fact that there are kind of these more subtle ways to advocate for the kids, because I mean, putting myself in their shoes, I imagine that there may be kind of a sense of shame or embarrassment about their situation, and they don't want that broadcast to their peers that they live in such a precarious set of circumstances. And so being able to help them kind of more behind the scenes and let them have their independence and their autonomy and kind of not compromising their sense of self-confidence or self-security when they're in front of people of their own age group, I imagine that's probably as important to them as getting the resources themselves.
You nailed it. The stigma can be overwhelming. Yeah. And so a lot of the challenge is just getting students to reach out to us in the first place. And we're very lucky. We work in over 100 schools in Pima County. And we have every single one of our schools has a designated liaison that's usually a school counselor or a really invested teacher. And they help us figure out who the students are. So they have their finger on the pulse of the school. They know which students are struggling. And they help refer students to us when they know that they need help and can qualify for our services.
And, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, you know, most of my guests are small business owners, but I like to also interview C-suite professionals whose companies have a particular impact on Tucson. And Yodo is definitely such an organization because we have to develop the next generation of an educated and healthy workforce. So in terms of, you know, why should people be concerned about this particular issue and the impact it has on us? How do you track the impact on Tucson? Like, what have you found to be true in terms of the ripple effect? You get a certain number of kids to actually graduate through school. Mm-hmm. Does Yodo track them beyond that, kind of the fields that they enter or places where they find an internship or a place of work? Kind of take us through kind of the life cycle, if you will, of a student who finds you to when they're entering maybe, you know, early adulthood and the significance of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do the numbers first. So our core mission is high school graduation. Arizona's high school graduation rate is about 78%. For Yodo students, it's 82%. So we're really proud of that. It's compared to all types of students with all types of support. Our students who are experiencing homelessness are graduating at a higher rate,
which is awesome.
And that translates to a real impact on Tucson because it's estimated that the lifetime cost of someone dropping out of high school is $382,000. That's the cost to the community over due to compromised health, relying on government programs. Mm-hmm. So if you multiply that by every one of our students that we're helping graduate, there's quite a big financial impact on the community just by helping these students stay in school against all odds and graduate. Now you had asked about what happens after graduation. So I love that question. We have an active Yodo alumni community, and they're everywhere. Every time I'm at the car wash, I'm at the grocery store, in my Yodo name tag, always someone's coming up to me, I used to be in Yodo. And it's wonderful. We have a board member on our board. We always have one Yodo alumni serving on our board, so we have one now, and she's fabulous. So we do stay connected to the students, but we haven't had the resources really to invest in any kind of longitudinal studies about what's the long-term impact. That's one of our biggest goals right now, and it's an area that we're heavily investing in. We have a donor that's helping us kind of think through that, so it's wonderful.
Right.
We'd love to have more we have a lot of the stories. So the qualitative impact we know is there. The students are reconnecting with us, but we want to know the numbers too. We'd love to know what professions they're going into, how long mm-hmm. they're staying employed, because these are things we know have a long term impact on their success as adults. Mm-hmm. And we try, we don't want the faucet to just turn off once they graduate high school. We don't want to just put them out in the world on their own. They're still going to have all the same life circumstances the day after they graduated than the day before.
Yes.
So we try to offer some transition services so they can still access food if they need to. Mm-hmm. We have an ambassador program, which is where alumni can apply to come back and receive some services from us in exchange for being kind of like a spokesperson for YODO. So they get some training in public speaking and writing, and it's really wonderful.
That is wonderful.
Yeah. So we make efforts with our alumni, but we'd like to do some more deep studies on the true impact and their kind of long-term employment and how many of them go on to college. And we have a lot of questions we'd like to answer.
But we know at least in the short term, it's close to $400,000 per student in savings to the community.
Yes.
When they finish high school.
Yes, absolutely. And something exciting for us is that we're seeing our enrollment numbers grow every year. But lately, last year, we saw a 17% increase in students, which was our largest spike ever.
Wow.
So for us, we don't think there are 17% more homeless students. It's that they're learning about us as a resource and they're committing to stay in school. This isn't, YODO is unique in that there is accountability built in. The students have to commit to going to school and mm-hmm. getting good grades to be part of the program. That's part of the deal. Mm-hmm. So not every student chooses to participate in YODO because maybe they aren't able to or don't want to make that commitment to school. So the fact that we're seeing so many more students step up and say, yes, I want to commit to school. With your help, I can do it. It's so moving. It's wonderful.
And that there is something that I really wanted to emphasize as part of this interview, that the teens who are served by YODO are homeless through no fault of their own. A lot of them have parents who suffer from drug addiction or maybe another form of dependency, like an abusive relationship, and it prohibits them from creating stability for these kids. And I mean, you mentioned YODO's high school graduation rate is 82%, which is phenomenal because the U.S. nationwide averages a high school graduation rate of 80% and a 25% graduation rate from college. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, that is often because of financial challenges. And so when you think of the odds that students are already facing to get their education, YODO kids are at particularly high risk for not finishing school, and we've already discussed the cost mm-hmm. of that, both to them economically and emotionally, as well as to the community. Mm-hmm. Describe for us what is their life like, and what is it that they have to overcome to secure a better future for themselves, just so people who are listening to the show can get a very clear picture in their head. What these kids are kind of in, literally, they're enduring this and they're overcoming it. And I have so much respect for that. I want other people to be able to understand that.
Thank you. Well, first, I really appreciate that you made a point to state that students in YODO are homeless through no fault of their own, meaning that if a parent's just really strict and a teen runs away, they don't qualify for our program.
Right.
Our students are in a situation because an adult has abused them, abandoned them, or neglected them. Mm-hmm. Those are the reasons. And so, yes, some of the adults in that situation are dealing with substance abuse or other dependency issues, and some of them just are choosing not to parent anymore, which is can be really hard to understand for a lot of other people out there.
Yeah.
The daily life for our students is constant change, absolute lack of stability. So our students are very few of them are sort of traditionally homeless in the way that we might see homelessness on the street, where there's a person sleeping in a wash or on a corner. Mm-hmm. We do have some students in those situations. The majority of them are couch surfing, so they might stay at a friend's house for a week, then another friend takes them in. Sometimes they can stay with a relative for a month, then another relative maybe for a month, then a friend's house for a little while. So they're really hopping around, which means a lot of instability for them in terms of their home life, but also their school life. If the place they can stay is in a different school district, then they're hopping schools a lot. It's a real battle just to maintain any level of consistency. And so in addition to just the logistics, they're also not really getting any consistent support from adults outside of their school setting. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they're reaching out and a guidance counselor or a teacher is really investing in them in the school, but that's not guaranteed. And sometimes they're shy or they don't want to talk about what they're going through.
Yeah.
So it can be really isolating. That's what it can feel like. They're dealing with food insecurity. Most of them cannot tell you where they're going to get their next meal for the week, you know. So that's why food is one of the top things that we provide for free to students. But it's also one of the top things they spend their stipend on. When we ask them, how are you using the money that you earn at Yodo? The number one answer is food. So, you know, that's a huge challenge. Try to go to school and take an algebra test when you're really hungry. You haven't eaten three meals in a row.
Right.
It can really impact your school performance,
sure,
too. And then they're just dealing with other issues. Some of them sort of equate school with failure, so they can really struggle with having credit deficiencies and feeling like it's an insurmountable task to reach graduation. So we try to help them see there is a path. And then the truth is that a lot of them are taking care of other people. So if a parent abandons their child, they might actually be abandoning three children. So if you're the older sibling in that family, now all of a sudden you're also taking care of two other people in that family. And about 9% of our students are parenting youth. So they're parents. They're taking care of toddlers while they're also trying to finish high school. And that's just kind of an added complexity for them. All of this while attempting to or pretending to kind of be a normal teen and just fit in at school. It's really hard. So the kind of barriers they're overcoming, you asked about that. They are, the number one thing is kind of the stigma of being a homeless youth. And we really try to watch our own language around that and use terms like youth experiencing homelessness. So it's not a label that they're kind of taking around with them. It's a temporary thing that they're dealing with now.
That's an important thing to distinguish.
Yes, definitely. But also, you know, the other barriers they're dealing with are things like some of them may qualify for services through the Department of Child Safety, but that's a very overloaded system. Yeah. They may have had a bad experience in a group home. I mean, there's a whole lot of interaction with the system in general that creates some perceived or real barriers for students in the future.
And I remember reading on your website, I think one of the student testimonials that you had on there, the student said something to the effect that, you know, this may not be something that I talk about a lot, and it may not seem like it, but this program means everything to me. Mm-hmm. And she kind of came across as someone who was shy and private, but wholly grateful for the resources that she was receiving. And there was something in just this little testimonial that was really touching and I thought probably applies to a lot of the kids, that they don't want to walk around being an open nerve and being the poster child for a particular cause. They're just trying to get through the day. And what it takes for them to get through the day is almost superhuman.
I absolutely agree. I would say that's a very typical experience of a student. But then we also have some students who are ready to just get on the roof and sing the song of Yodo. You know, they sometimes just having the having some adults reach out and help you can really turn on a light switch, you know, for some students. So, yes, it's sort of all over the board. But I think what you described is very typical.
What's a particular success story that sticks out in your mind? I mean, you mentioned you always have an alumni who's on the board, and I know others have gone on to hold positions of great responsibility in business. Mm. They have families of their own, and they may not have had a shot at doing that had it not been for this program. But is there kind of one story in particular that when things get hard and it's a really tough day and you're having to fight for more funds for a change, like you have this student in your mind?
Oh, there are so many, but the one student, I've been spending a lot of time with one particular student lately because he came back to be an ambassador of Yodo. So he graduated high school, and now he is a spokesperson for Yodo, basically, on the side. But it's a way for him to earn some income while he's finishing school. He went to college. So we're very excited. So he's in town, and I love hearing his story because it starts out pretty dark and it ends out up. It ends up very light, so I love thinking about it. But yes, this student was in a family with a single mom, so the father had left the family earlier, and so they were sort of already low income and struggling. The mom got a new boyfriend; everything seemed good. They got married, and then all of a sudden, the stepfather was really unhappy with this particular student. So felt like he wasn't manly enough, not masculine enough, and he started abusing him as a result. And in the end, it was a situation where the mom had to sort of pick between the new husband and the son, and she picked the husband. Ugh. So I bring this story up because that's not very uncommon at all. Really, family disagreements, especially when there's a new parent brought into the picture, is a really common reason that our students are sort of kicked out of the house and made to fend for themselves. So he did. He found his own place to live. He supported himself. He graduated high school. He currently works two jobs in addition to being a Yodo ambassador, and he started his own business that he's growing now with. Wow. I mean, he's really taken advantage of every resource Yodo had to offer. He has mentors through our program. He created a really wonderful relationship with one of our donors that he sees regularly. And I think he just really embraced all of the opportunities, and it's had a huge impact on his life. And he's such a wonderful kind of example because the beginning started out very typical. His story could be 100 other student stories. Yeah. But I think he turned it around in such a unique way because he embraced all the chances that he got and all the helping hands that were reaching out for him. He grabbed them all. And it's just been wonderful to see him kind of grow through that process, and his goal is to finish school. And I mean, he's just, he's a really wonderful example, but, you know, unfortunately not every student kind of gets this experience, and we hope that we can offer it to as many as possible. And that students feel like they deserve the help.
And if your parent chooses a new spouse over you, I can't imagine what that does to your self-esteem and your self-confidence. And when someone is genuinely reaching out to you and trying to offer you help and sees your value, it is difficult to capitalize on that if you don't see the value in yourself.
You couldn't have said it better. That's exactly right. There's a lot of confidence building and self-worth that has to happen. And sometimes that happens through, you know, an adult intervention, like one of the Yodo staff. But we also have something called Yodo groups, which is where if there are multiple Yodo students at a school, they can get together periodically. And sometimes they're learning financial literacy, but sometimes they're just talking through kind of how they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think because we've talked about the stigma and it being kind of like an invisible issue that students feel are experiencing because they don't want to name it and grab it and own it as an identity. Sometimes that can be really isolating. So it helps to have a peer group that you can talk to, lean on, relate to, especially if the whole rest of the day you're pretending that you're totally just like everyone else, but you know you're really not, and you're dealing with some of that stuff in a unique way.
How many students does Yodo currently serve?
So in the school year that just ended, we served over 2,000 students, 2,054 students. And that's – so we only serve teens, so middle school and high school. It's estimated that there are around 5,600 homeless youth in our county. So not all would qualify for our program because some are younger. They're in elementary school. But for the middle school and high school students, we know there are more. We know we could serve more students. And one of my challenges as the CEO is figuring out how are we going to continue to raise the resources we need to grow our enrollment. This year, for the first time ever, we increased our student stipend to $160 a month, I mentioned. And All previously, it had been $140. So that was a pretty significant impact if you think about 2,000 students and budgeting for that.
Yes.
And we think that our student numbers will continue to grow. So we're the board is very engaged in making sure we are fiscally responsible, and we have a good reserve. We're saving money, but we also really need to be getting the word out about Yodo and how much support we could use from the community.
We're going to take a quick break. This is Small Biz Big Voices, hosted by Stephanie Rising. I'm a small business owner on a mission to get business owners off their hamster wheel and empower them as authentic and influential leaders. My coaching program centers around the 7 primal business needs. Today, I'm visiting with Elizabeth Slater of Youth on Their Own. In terms of getting kids the resources that they need and maybe matching them up, especially after high school, you know, I started thinking that the oldest members of Gen Z are now 21, right? And we've discussed out of necessity, there are a lot of Yodo students who have already entered the workforce, at least part-time. I often hear business owners talk about being short-staffed, but unable to find reliable entry-level workers. Since you're always around kids and of this age, what strengths do you feel Gen Z could bring to an organization if it was willing to invest in younger workers?
That's a great question. Well, I think every business should take a risk on younger workers because it's worth it. It's particularly challenging if they're still in school in that they need to work around their school schedule. So I understand that doesn't always work for businesses. But what we found specific to young workers who have struggled in some way, so that could be a Yodo student or really any student that just has gone through a hardship, is that they are particularly resilient. They bring a skill that you might not find in every worker. They are often they grew up faster than their peers. They've had to deal with big issues. So that means that they are more self-sufficient and kind of creative in solving problems. And those are amazing assets for a business. The other side of that coin is that what we were discussing earlier, they often lack confidence. Maybe they don't see their own potential, or they didn't have adults kind of encouraging them and telling them they were special. They might not have ever had that. So there is a little bit of being intentional about building confidence through encouragement and helping, teaching new skills and then helping the workers feel ownership over their work. And for us, I mean, we do employ Yodo students as our ambassadors, and we've really seen that they bring something special to the table, because not just that they value the opportunity, which is part of it, but they have really had a life experience that prepared them in totally unique ways from other workers. Mostly it's around resiliency and, you know, I guess not being challenges don't intimidate them in the same way. You know, they faced some big stuff.
I was just thinking they're not easily deterred.
Correct.
I mean, given what they have to do on a daily basis just to survive and finish school, they are not going to wimp out when the smallest crisis or the smallest challenge arises.
Exactly. We've seen such an extreme commitment to achieve a goal when we have 2,000 homeless youth who are saying, despite all the chaos in my life, I want to keep going to school and graduate. So this willingness to succeed, and they want to be productive citizens, you know, sometimes there's an element of patience required at first, but I think it completely pays off at the end.
I wanted to switch gears and discuss how you approach fundraising. And I'm asking this because one of the things that I've observed over the years is this discomfort that a lot of us feel around money, whether, you know, as business owners, we have to determine our fees, we have to collect outstanding invoices, or sometimes we're just afraid to hear, well, no, I'm not going to pay you that much, right? Like, and this paralyzes people from making the ask. And it's not a pushy ask, or it's not that we even go into it with any specific expectation. It's more like, well, I'm hearing that you have a problem. I think I might be able to fix it. Would you like to learn more about what I do? And knowing that has any remote connection to money, really freaks people out. And so I wanted to use this interview as an opportunity to pick the brain of someone who has to routinely ask for money, because there must be something in your brain that is very fearless around this. And so I wanted to ask you, you know, have you had any fears, or did you have any fear around making that ask when you first started fundraising? And how did you conquer that?
So, of course, I've had the fear. I mean, well, first, let me say, you know, to me, fundraising is not asking for money. It's matchmaking. That's how I look at it. And I think a business offering a service could maybe alter their perspective a little bit, too, and think of it that way. Hmm. And then when, you know, when you think about matchmaking, sometimes it simply isn't a good match. You know, it's not because you did something wrong. Just sometimes it's a good match and sometimes it isn't.
It's not a personal rejection.
Yes. But also, you know, I think as a fundraiser, I think about how I'm presenting someone an opportunity to make a difference. It's not – I'm not asking them for money to enable what I want to do. I'm giving them a chance to do something that will mean something to them. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that reframing is really helpful. But really the fear of the ask is so universal. And the way I conquered this fear as a younger fundraiser is I literally wallpapered my office with rejection letters. And I truly, every time I got one, I hung it up on the wall.
Really?
Yes.
That's
and
awesome.
It was facing the worst case scenario every day.
Right.
And then realizing it isn't that bad. Like, I was still succeeding in a lot of other ways. The organizations I was working for were still thriving.
Right. No does
mission.
Not kill.
It doesn't at all. In fact, it was decorating my office by the end, truly, because you hear no a lot and you just have to be ready for that. Like, not everything's a good match. And, you know, the worst thing a fundraiser can do is chase money or try to force something that isn't a good match in the first place. So I think that's where you end up getting in trouble with facing more rejections, because you should do some homework on your own first to make sure that something is a good match from your perspective. Mm-hmm. But really, I have very frank conversations with people about money every day. So it took a while to get to this place. But what I learned is that the fear in my head, it's oversized. It's never like as awkward as I expect it to be ever. Yeah. And even the situations I've walked into where I expected a smooth conversation and I was totally caught off guard and had a really challenging conversation. This happened to me just a couple weeks ago. I went in thinking I assume support in all conversations. That's my default mindset, is assume support.
Yeah.
So I went in thinking it was going to be smooth, and it was not. It was very challenging. That's really a time when I feel like I've learned the most about myself and how I approach work and what are the dynamics with someone in a room where things get tense, and just how do you lead through that? I really enjoy it from that point of view. And that in the moment, it feels terrible, but you're really learning a lot that's helping you the next time you get into that situation. But again, I just reiterate, I think the fear is outsized in my experience, that I have more anxiety than it calls for. And most conversations are delightful. And if people don't want to make a donation, in my case, or enter into a business partnership or anything, it is about it not being personal, that it's really about whether it's a good match.
That is great advice. I think I'm going to turn this into a transcript and then hand it out to about 10 different people. Thank you for that perspective.
Sure.
I also think, you know, aside from the anxiety around money, I think that there are a lot of business owners and professionals who butt up against those moments when they question why they continue to do what they do. I mean, we've all had those days where we go home at the end of the day and we just feel like all we've done is beat our head against the wall. I imagine fundraising, especially with the success that you've had, is also a fairly tireless effort. And so, you know, we're constantly expending this energy to achieve some kind of a result, some outcome, right? Whether for ourselves or for others. How did nonprofit work come to have such meaning for you? And more importantly, what keeps you going during those moments where it's just really hard?
Great question. Well, to the first part of your question, how did I get to this work? How does it have meaning for me? I have a compulsion to matter, I guess is the way I would say that. Yeah, I think about June Carter, like famously she would say to friends, they would say, "How you doing, June?" And she would say, "I'm just trying to matter." That was her answer. And
that's
exactly how I feel every day. So I feel very, very, very lucky to be doing something that is so meaningful to me, yeah. Fighting for youth who need an advocate. It sustains me far more than any of the challenges that I face. The scale is so tipped by the mission that's really where the sustaining comes from, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I also had, you know, a really good mentor who tapped me on the shoulder about 20 something years ago and suggested that I get into fundraising. Someone who said, "Oh, this is what I think you'd be good at this. You should try it." And it's a way to make a difference in a new way that, you know, prior to that, I'd really been working directly one-on-one with youth. So it turns out I really like fundraising. And even though the stakes are so high, I know actually the stakes are very high. There are 2,000 youth depending on me to run this organization and make sure we keep the doors open and the lights on. So the pressure is enormous in that sense, because you don't want to let any of those students down ever. I mean, if we ever had to turn a student away, that would be, you know, the worst day of my life. So it's kind of both in that it's very motivating, and it can also just be, it can really give you a great reality check that you have a huge responsibility. And I'm sure that a lot of folks running businesses feel this too, for their employees, for their families. I mean, the responsibility is incredible. But for me, nothing really outweighs the mission and the chance to make a difference. And if I can feel like I'm mattering and doing the best I can, that's always going to get me up in the morning. It's always going to get me in the shower, get me to the office, get me through the day. No matter what kind of tough stuff is coming up or the bumps on the way, they just don't matter as much as the end goal and just feeling really inspired about the work.
If you want to be part of Elizabeth's mission,
yay!
I've been for 8 years. I'm a huge Yodo fan, in case you haven't picked up on that by now. If you want to be part of what Youth on Their Own represents and what they're trying to achieve and how you can make a difference for a student in need, you can visit their website at yodo.com. That's YOTO.com. And we're also going to include that link in today's show notes. So now we're going to go to the Proust Lightning Round.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
All right. The Proust Questionnaire was a parlor game made popular by the French essayist and novelist Marcel Proust. He believed that by answering 35 specific questions, an individual reveals their true nature. We're going to go through as many questions as we can in just 3 minutes. Okay?
Let's do it.
All right. The first is, which historical figure do you most identify with?
Oh, my gosh. I wish I thought of these ahead of time.
I like the spontaneity part. Sorry. This is the only part of the interview where you're put on the spot.
Oh, I like that. This is a totally weird answer, but I feel like I was just watching a movie. Oh, this sounds silly. I was just watching a movie about the Puritans that came over to America.
Yeah.
And they were – and like all the villages they kind of set up and had to do everything on their own, cook their food and grow corn and all the things.
Sure.
And I just, for some reason, was feeling so connected to those folks. Like that was an experience I would really connect with, is like start going to a new place, starting over, building your whole life again.
Forge something into existence.
Yeah.
I like it. That doesn't sound weird. That works.
Okay.
Who are your heroes in real life?
Oh, gosh, I have so many heroes, and I won't get specific, but now that we're in, like, political season, I feel like I'm bombarded with my heroes every day. I'm reaching out for them. But I will say that on a real day-to-day level, the students in my program in Yodo are truly heroes to me, because they face every obstacle, and they just try their hardest every day, and I just want to have a little bit of that commitment to reaching their dreams, so yeah. I'll say them.
That's awesome. I will confess there have been more than one occasion when I'm having a rough day. I'm really deeply feeling sorry for myself. And I will make myself go to the Yoda website and wow. read one of the student testimonials. And I'm like, oh, Stephanie, you just got to pull it together.
That's
Come
amazing,
on.
Stephanie.
It's very motivating. It's like, if these kids can do it, like, you can get over your little
that's so great.
Tiny problem. What are your favorite names?
Names?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. That is a really hard question.
Do you want to pass?
Yes, let's pass. What are yours?
Well, mine are George, who's my husband, and Alexandra and Natalie, who are my nieces.
Wonderful.
Those are my favorite
names. That's a
great answer. What is it that you most dislike?
In life?
Mm-hmm.
Being cold.
Yeah.
Actually, it kind of ties with the running. I also strongly dislike running. Those are my two top. They'll at the top, always.
Yeah, then we immediately have two things deeply in common with
yes.
one another. What is your greatest regret?
Oh, I really try not to hold on to regrets. But you know what keeps me up at night? Like, do you ever just replay conversations in your head over and over? So really the moments that I regret are times when I wasn't kind. I think about it a lot. Like, I'll replay a conversation and think, oh, I could have been kinder to that person.
Yeah, I understand that. And lastly, what is your motto?
Well, just trying to matter, I guess, is my motto, which I already mentioned. That is kind of what I live by.
That's awesome. I'd love to have you chime in at the end of our last segment. Dear Coach gives our listeners the chance to have their emailed questions addressed. And today's segment is about how to create 100 potential referral partners in one simple exercise. So trying to get the word out about your services or products can feel overwhelming, and it's hard to know where to start. So the 10 by 10 exercise brings focus and a process to that effort, as well as make introductions feel more like a warm-up than a cold call. Before you panic at the prospect of networking, remember, people can't refer to you or buy from you if they don't know you exist. So other professionals who share your target market but are not in competition with you are excellent referral partners. This approach is a simple way to develop a list of who to introduce yourself to. If you don't have to sell them, you don't have to pitch them, or otherwise feel like you're imposing upon them. You just have to introduce yourself to them and have a genuine interest in learning about them too. So first, develop a list of 10 types of businesses that have the same potential clients as you. For example, I'm a business coach. So as a business-to-business provider, my list includes lawyers, CPAs, bookkeepers, financial planners, insurance agents, website designers, print shops, commercial lenders, office supply companies, and IT technicians. These are all people who can bring valuable advice and resources to my clients, and I might be able to help their clients as well. When you have a list of 10 business types, compile a list of 10 companies for each type. So you can go on Chamber of Commerce websites and look at membership lists. There are professional and networking organization membership lists. And you can also research businesses just by zip code. These are all easy online searches that quickly yield a list of 100 potential businesses to contact because you have 10 types of businesses with a list of 10 companies for each. You also can ask for qualified names or introductions from people you already know in the categories that you identify. So, for example, imagine you are a credit counselor needing to expand your reach in the community. You may find it useful to introduce yourself to bankruptcy attorneys, divorce attorneys, business attorneys, accountants, therapists, auto brokers, mortgage brokers, realtors, business coaches, and personal bankers. You could start by Googling a category by zip code, such as bankruptcy attorney 85718. Right? Then you copy and paste the contact information into a referral partner list and confirm with a further website search or a phone call the name of the decision maker in that office. Following that process for each category will yield 100 professionals who could potentially refer business to you. Better yet, they could also serve as a qualified resource to your existing clients, which makes you that much more of a trusted resource to your clients. Once you have compiled your list, schedule time to introduce yourself to a potential referral partner. A realistic goal is at least one a week. Everyone can do that, okay? An easy way to warm up an introduction is to send a brief letter or a card outlining the benefits of your service to their clients. Think of three things, right? But keep the focus on how you bring value to them. Next, follow up with a phone call and ask if you can meet them over coffee or maybe briefly at their office. Be respectful of their time. You might choose to provide incentives to excite potential referral partners. Paying referral fees is an excellent way to supercharge your efforts if it's allowed by your or their industry. Also, provide partners with a written summary of the types of clients you seek and services you provide. Be sure to ask them for the same, because reciprocity strengthens a referral partnership. Don't feel like you can't reciprocate just because you now know 10 people in the same profession. They may serve different areas of town, you may know people who would work better with some contacts rather than others, or you may know people who need more than one estimate. It's actually to your advantage to know more than one person in any given industry, and it makes you an even greater resource to your clients. Elizabeth, we have a couple of minutes left. As someone who has been incredibly successful with fundraising, what advice or lessons do you have for connecting with resources you need?
Well, two things I love that I just heard in that exercise. One is about the initial conversation just being to get to know someone, to ask mm-hmm. questions, because I think that's, you know, always the hardest. If you're not a natural kind of networker, mm-hmm. then knowing what to say to someone is so hard. But actually just asking questions and learning about them
yes.
is what helps you, because then you kind of hear what they care about, what matters to them. And then you can kind of do the assessment in your head about if the matchmaking's going to happen or not. But the second thing was thinking about looking within your networks and if you can give your folks really specific guidance around what kind of referrals you're looking for. Mm-hmm. I do that all the time with our board members, and I might say, we're trying to identify someone that has these traits or qualities. Who do you know that you could introduce me to? That's always a better conversation than me calling a stranger. If I can get someone who knows us both to introduce me, there's a much better chance I can get them on the phone.
Excellent. I'm going to add that. I put the show notes on the Small Biz Big Voices Facebook page, and I will make sure to include that in the notes. It's like, pick up the phone and start talking to people you know. They're the warmest way to get
Absolutely.
A good introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. That brings us to the end of today's episode. If you have a question or problem you'd like for us to talk about during our Dear Coach segment, please email me at stephanie@therisingeffect.com. I invite you to follow the show on our Small Biz Big Voices Facebook page, which includes show notes and announcements for upcoming shows. Next month, I will have a panel of award-winning women chefs who will give us the dish on niche markets, competing in a traditionally male-dominated field, and recipes born from childhood. My thanks again to my guest, Elizabeth Slater of Youth on Their Own, my producer, Mark Bishop, and to you for joining us on Small Biz Big Voices.